Welcome to the KBB Review Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Davis, and this is episode 2 of season 12. Thank you to everyone who listened to last week's big show opener, kicking off the new season. It was all about getting your second showroom, and we've had a lot of great feedback about it, so thanks very much. Tell all your friends. I've told all of mine, so that's 3 new listeners. Now on to this week, and as a loyal listener, I would like to present you with our brand new podcast brochure. Yes, it's 200 pages of glossy pictures of me talking into a microphone in my loft, as well as a full price list for the Christmas decorations, boxes of toddler toys and suitcases that will appear with me. Although hang on, since the episode started just a few seconds ago, those prices have actually gone up, so ignore that, and here's a sticker to put on the front of the podcast to remind you to add 5%. Yeah, I think I've stretched that far enough now. Yes, this week's episode is all about brochures. They're always there, new ones are always being delivered, and if you're a retailer, they're just a staple fixture of working with brands. But what do retailers and designers actually use them for? What do they say about the brand? Do suppliers assume they get given out to every potential customer who comes through the door, and are too many simply thrown away and wasted? And probably most importantly, should they have prices in them or not? Such seemingly simple things as brochures touch on so many different aspects of the day-to-day life of a retailer. So I'll be talking it all through with retailers Paul Crow, the MD of Ripples, and Adam Woolerton from Bathroom & Kitchen 11 in Surrey. And in the supplier's corner, Sophia Sharalambas from Origins Living. It's fascinating stuff, so that's coming up next. But first, this is episode 2 of season 12 of the KBB Review Podcast. So if you're listening to this and you're not following us in your podcast app of choice, then why not? There's well over 200 other episodes sitting there waiting for your ears to join them. And if you're listening in your browser, then search for KBB Review, or one word, in an app such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify or YouTube, and you'll find us there, and you can follow us there. That way, you'll never miss an episode. So here are our panel of our proofreaders. First up, we have Paul Crow from Ripples. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We have Adam Woolerton from Bathroom & Kitchen 11. Hello, Adam.
Morning, Andrew.
You're our first timer.
Yes, yeah. Excited to be here.
Well, don't get carried away. And we have from Origins Living, Sophia Sharalambas. Hello, Sophia.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello to you. Right. We're going to talk about brochures, as we said. And I want to start with you, Sophia, actually, because you're our supplier here, who's bravely entered this conversation. You produce a brochure. So give us an idea of how important brochures are to you and what you see the point and purpose of them is.
Brochures are integral for our business. We couldn't function without them. So we invest a lot of time and money in them. And the way we see them and we would like them to be used is as a tool for showrooms to showcase what we have to the clients. In fact, we see it as two ways. One is for our showrooms, our designers, to use the brochure, if they so wish, as a master copy, and also to have a small set if they need them to give out to customers and to discuss ideas with them. What we don't want is for our customers just to hand them out without any qualification.
Right, and they are expensive things to do, aren't they? You put an awful lot of work into them.
They are expensive, and if we break it down cost per brochure, it's about £1.50 a brochure, which doesn't seem a lot, but when you add up how many brochures we print, it is a lot, and furthermore, we send them out. So if we were to send a box of 15 brochures out, that would cost us about £25 to send a box out.
Plus, of course, there's photography and everything else that goes into the actual content.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just talking about the cost of the printing, not the cost of putting it together, because we would have to do that anyway for our website. So that cost is spread over in terms of putting it together, the images, the copy. For us, it's the setup cost with the printers and the physical copies.
And what's the lifespan of one of your brochures?
12 months.
Right, so you literally every 12 months the new one comes out.
Yeah, I mean, we've become very refined in the way that we produce them. We're also, unless, you know, there's a calamity, the prices we set at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the brochure, we've always kept them for that whole year. We don't add surcharges. We build it in.
Well, unfortunately, you're the only one who probably does that these days. So let's talk to you, Adam.
Yeah.
How do you use brochures? You've got clients coming into the showroom, you're talking them through projects. How do you use them? Do you hand them out just when they do an initial inquiry? Are you using them as a reference? How do you use them?
For us, at Bathroom and Kitchen Level, we see Amara as a tool for designer rather than for the client. So kind of touching on what Sophia said, we're probably a little bit unique in that if clients are coming to us, it probably depends totally on what type of client your market is, I guess. For us, it's very much people coming to us for design. So they're not looking to shop products for their bathroom. They're coming to a designer to trust us to listen to them, their wants, needs, desires, and what aesthetic they're looking for. And then I would, you know, if someone said to me, I'm looking for a Scandi design bathroom, I would then go to a brochure like Origins Livid and I would kind of flick through and I look at accessories that I feel fit that kind of design scheme and then use the brochure to, if I find a colour, a finish I like, to look for a range that then has that across all the aspects of the bathroom I need it to. And then I do the same for the next brand. And I tend to end up with a mood board of brochures in front of me on the desk. I'll be trying to make sure I match furniture, accessories, taps. And I use them as a tool for me as a designer. And I know my colleague Alex does very much the same. So for us, we kind of have one set of brochures, one for each brand, and we share them between us. So we don't give anything out to clients just because, yeah, we feel like if people are coming to us, we want to show our clients that we're doing that work. We just want to put ideas forward and get their feedback, but not necessarily expect them to flick through and find things they want or like.
Right, so none of your clients are leaving with an armful of brochures?
No. So they might know what brands we've used, especially because when they come in, we've usually got a mood board set up, so they'll be aware of what brands we're using. But no, they'd never kind of leave with brochures. We're kind of also not expecting them to, because we want to encourage them to come back to us to ask questions. So I think that is an element of why we don't give them out as well. Like, we want clients to say, Adam, we really like this idea and these kind of colours and finishes and that shape, but I was wondering, if is there anything that looks more like this, for example? And, you know, and we want them to come back and engage with us. So I think not a case of like giving the less they'll have to come back, but more like, if we, you know, if we gave everything out, what reason have they got to come back, kind of thing. So I think we want to try and engage them in wanting to chat to their designer. And I always feel that's a more personable approach too, because it gives us a chance to explain why we're using those items in that room, and, you know, why they work for the space that they're wanting to create, really.
Paul, you've been in this industry a long time. You're an industry veteran.
Thank you.
The role of brochures has really changed a lot, hasn't it? Because even when I started visiting showrooms a lot, it really was give out a brochure. That was the role of them. Whereas, as Adam now says, they're much more of a kind of reference tool for the designer. What do you think?
Exactly that. Exactly what Adam said. I mean, ultimately and anecdotally, we're probably giving them out to maybe 10% of our showroom visitors as a most. So on the whole, they are tools that vary in usefulness, but they're tools used at the desk to help decisions be made, to help do research. They're probably, if I'm honest, when they are handed out, actually used as a tool to save time for the designer in the showroom, because the client is more of a shopper. You know, it can be very beneficial, many brochures. Some people, I think Sophia's is a good example, actually, where people like to have a look at it, sat around their coffee table, choosing what the right shape, colour, size, and not really wanting to do it in the showroom, then it is a really good tool for them to take away, because they can hopefully be seduced by the options. But on the whole, I mean, we might give it to someone because they're just asking a lot of questions that tell us that they're possibly not ready or in the right showroom. And it doesn't mean to say we don't try and create an opportunity, but we might give them a couple just to make them feel valued. But it's an awful thing to say, but it's the truth. To us, really, it's a tool for us and nothing more.
I mean, Sophia, does it surprise you to learn that not as many of these brochures are given out to consumers as you might think? For what you said, you very much see it as a hybrid thing. But I think an awful lot of suppliers think that retailers are giving them out to every person who walks in the showroom.
No, I'm not surprised at all. But it also, we break down our retail partners in personas. So Ripples and Bathrooms and Kitchens 11 are at the end where they're actually designers. They're creating designs, they're creating ideas. Therefore, they only use the brochure as a tool or if they have to give one out. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, we have the Pilot High and Sell It. So some of our customers will just leave the brochures at a table for anyone to take them. So no, I am not surprised at all by what Adam and Paul have to say. That's why we manage the way we deal with brochures. And it's about educating some of the customers that think brochures can be, you know, we can send them hundreds and hundreds. And then when you look at their sales, they haven't even covered the cost of us sending them the brochures.
Right, yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Adam, how many brochures is too many brochures? if you've got several brochures coming out for all your suppliers all the time, you're left with a big pile of them. Do they sort of all blend into each other? Do you have a big bin full of them? How does that work?
Yes. I mean, I really obviously enjoy using a brochure. I think when it comes to brands and having piles of them, I think we're quite selective and we're quite true to, we stick with certain suppliers, for example. We don't brand haul. We have a few for furniture, a few for brassware, a few for accessories. So the other thing is, you know, we try and keep and maintain that we don't just collect new brands as we go along and kind of go on for years in the industry. We like to be specialists, and also it allows us to keep in touch with what brands are releasing as well. So brand, you know, like Origins Living, Capietro, Danzani, some of the ones we use, they're really good at keeping us up to date with new releases and such. And I think that's kind of a conscious decision we made, especially a few years ago, I think probably just after or maybe before COVID even, where we just said, you know what, we want to be specialists, we want to really get behind and know our brands. And as a result of that, it's just kind of led to less brochures. But it also means that as things are released, we're actually paying attention to them, which is probably nice for Sophia to hear later. As things come out, we're excited by them. We actually see them. They don't just fly across our desk. We're like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I want to use a design that uses this. So yeah, we don't really stack up the brochures. We've got a good relationship with all our brands that they know only to send us one or two copies of a brochure. Just, it's greener, obviously, as well, isn't it? So, like, we like to try and keep and maintain that. And then we just make sure we keep them up to date. So as a new one comes in, we recycle the old one and just start working from the new one as soon as it takes effect, really.
Paul, you've got all of your showrooms who almost get all the copies of all the brochures, because obviously you're dealing with most of the same suppliers. What information do you want in them? Do you want everything in there? Is it a full specification, technical specs, catalogue? Is it a sales tool? What information is in there that is superfluous, and what is in there that's the most useful?
Genuinely, there is no answer. You have to match it, frankly, to the manufacturer and the product, and that tends to be linked to the financial size of that organization. And, you know, some manufacturers, as an example, can cater for a superb document for the retailer, which has got all your questions answered in it. And it might be 3 or 4 inches thick in some places, but you wouldn't want to lose it. And whilst it's pretty much probably all available online, that's also used, you still kind of need these things in front of you. I think that's, whether that's a poor habit or not, they do get used very, very extensively. And if you've got such a document, you then really want the brochure that you're handing out to be something to support what you're already saying to the customer, and something that's going to, you know, if we're honest, maybe portray that product and that company in a better light than you can do yourself in your own showroom. Although it's easy to say that shouldn't be the case, I think that with good photography, marketing and everything else, the brochure should be an extension of what you're doing and something that you can use to your advantage. And I think the reality is often the brochure itself gets a little bit caught in no man's land, and it can tend to be a bit of both. And it, you know, might start with a lifestyle picture on the front cover and descend very rapidly into, you know, the Argos catalogue full of a little bit too much information. And then you're handing out something, if someone does need it, that's 120 pages. It's just not needed. And I think the real issue of all of this is, at the end of the year, how many of us are throwing away brochures? And an awful lot of them, how many consumers are throwing these away? And we have to pay for our rubbish to be taken away. And it's all very well saying it's being recycled, but we've got boxes and boxes, and it's kind of sent in an unsolicited way. And clearly this is a huge cost, as Sophia has said. And you know, one manufacturer I spoke to said that it's 50% of their marketing budget. I'm sure that's before they've actually produced the photography and everything else. So it's kind of a crazy cost. But they also said they need to do it because their customers need it for the sales. And again, as Sophia said, but not all their customer. And they were able to segregate that comment. So I think that it probably needs a wider look at what the tool is and who it's tailored for, because I think there's a distinct separation between those people that are using it as the retail experience and those people who use it to aid it. And it does seem to get a little bit blurry in between, and the losers ultimately, you know, the money side of things, and of course the rainforest.
Well, we'll touch on the sustainability element of it in a minute, but I'm really interested by this idea that I think traditionally brands have the brochure. That is our brochure. That is the brochure that we have for the year. Whereas actually what you're suggesting is probably correct, and maybe it should be a little bit more nuanced than that you have the beautiful brochure, then you have the technical specs brochure, and then you have the retailer brochure, the same number of brochures but divided amongst different markets, if that makes sense. What do you think, Sophia? Is it one size fits all?
It's not one size fits all. And before I answer that question, I picked up on Paul saying some brands send brochures unsolicited. We don't do that at all. We'll send at the beginning of a new catalogue, every single retail partner will automatically receive one copy. If they want more than one copy, then they need to contact us to say that they would like further copies. But we would never, ever send more than one unless requested. And this year we changed it for the agents where we said to them, you cannot have boxes in your car. We'll give you enough to go round to give a couple to each designer. But if anyone wants more than a few, we have to have an email because then we're actually tracking the return on investment.
That's great to hear.
Absolutely.
We are hypocrites. I mean, when we first offered our brochure online for people to request, they had an option, they can download it or they could have it posted to them, and we left it as their decision. And about 8 or 9 years ago, when we first started doing that, it was 55% of people downloaded it. And, you know, we sat there with our spreadsheet saying, well, the good news is in the future, we'll reduce our costs. And today it's 65% download it. So there's not really a significant change in the consumer's appetite to go to move to digital. And we prefer them to have our printed version. You know, we put a lot of effort into how it feels in your hand, et cetera, et cetera. And we feel it does a better job than the download. But we also have the same challenges that Sophia does and anybody does. We've got to then post it to them, which is, you know, we're producing less, but it costs more. But we hope rather blindly that it's having the impact that we believe that it's having. And we wouldn't want to change that. So we have to then sort of say to ourselves, well, are we in a position to say the same to the manufacturers that are ultimately just doing the same? It's a really challenging one for everybody because nobody would do it for fun. They're doing it because it's proven to work. I just think there's not enough debate about how we could just produce less, full stop. Offering less is one way, clearly, but there's lots of other ways. And getting it on the agenda like this is the first place to start. And really, the reason I say that is I meet so many marketing managers who say to me, they wish that they could be brave enough to produce less brochures and even have no brochures, but they either don't want to be the first or don't think they can get away with it. And so you feel like you're nudging towards something that it seems everybody wants but doesn't want. And it needs a bit of a push, I think.
Do you think, Adam, I mean, Paul raised a very good point there. Brochures say much more about the brand than just the information that's in them. The paper that they use, the quality of it, the photography that's in it. It's like, you know, when you get an iPhone in a box, it just feels amazing. It's like they spent so much time on the packaging because it just screams premium. And when you put a brochure in someone's hand, if it's just sort of flimsy paper and it hasn't been printed very well, it doesn't say a lot about the brand. It's a sales tool that projects a kind of level of premium and quality as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really thought about it that way, but actually when I think about the brands that I use a lot of, like I think about something that comes to mind initially is like picking up a Hansgrohe Axor brochure. It's a hardback brochure. It somehow just gives a feeling of kind of quality and an air of, oh, this is a good brand to use. And, you know, you can imagine like most showrooms, like we, you know, we get a lot of people kind of pop in and say, oh, have you heard about this brand? It's a new brand that's come to the UK. And they'll give us a brochure. And I mean, there is an element of you handed that brochure and you're like, oh, this maybe is reflecting where this sits in the market, i.e. a trade book is generally quite glossy and then it's got kind of really thin paper inside, whereas generally the more quality brochure just does give an edge of that to a designer. But it's really interesting, the actual feel of it, for sure. And then the photography, I mean, just tracking back a few comments, photographer for us does make a big impact because as designers, you know, if you're having a creative day and you hit a wall, sometimes those really good photography shots can be what inspire a design. So in Sophia's brochure, tiling brochures usually do it really well, like Capietra's, like, you know, you get all these kind of inspiration sources. But yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about our bookshelf at work between me and Alex when we're working, like I can picture the brochures and the ones that you do kind of grab every day. Yeah, I guess they do use a similar quality paper. They've got a similar finish, similar level of photography. Clients don't even see that side of it. That's purely me and Alex working. But there's 10 years in age between me and Alex. And like, well, we're working. Alex is very pro online. He predominantly uses brochures online. I tend to use a lot of paper brochures and the physical ones. But then there are websites like Pro Hansgrohe and Pro Duravit, which are very useful and very intuitive to use. And I know me and Sophia have had the chat before when we've been kind of, when I've been looking for things with Origins Living. I've messaged Sophia and said, oh, have you thought about adding this filter to your website? It would really make using it as a almost like an online brochure itself, like using the website. So not even an online version of a brochure, but just being able to use brand's websites like a brochure is something that I've chatted to Sophia about before, just because that is sometimes what we do. Like, we jump online, type it in, this is what I'm looking for, what's in the rest of the range, how do I find what's there? And that's how we've used them before.
But I suppose this is the hybrid version thing, isn't it, Sophia? But the, you know, your brand is very important to you, and there's nothing like picking up a very well-produced brochure, is there?
So we believe in the hybrid approach, and if you go on our website, we've got a digital flipbook. So it actually emulates our physical brochure. So when you flick the page, it makes the noise. And I know from myself, if a brand has a digital flipbook, I generally use that more than I would use a paper copy. We have most, and I'm taking on board what Adam and Paul are saying, we have most of the technical information on our website. We have enough in the brochure for a tool and for the retailers to use with their customers, you know, pricing, measurements, material, but any other technical information, they will find it on the website. And Adam, read the filters. We took exactly on board what you said, and that the new version will have more information to encourage our customers to use our website. But I agree again that our brochure is our brand. It's our front window display. So when our brochure is on a showroom desk, we want it to exude our brand values. So we believe that a physical copy will always be part of our marketing mix. There is no way we would ever get rid of our brochure. But what we have done is reduce the size. So we went from A4 to B5, and our customers went crazy when we went down to B5. Honestly, it was very Marmite. So then this year we went slightly bigger than B5, but not as big as A4. At least we were saving 20% of the paper, both for the environment and also the cost.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the sustainability element of it, because one of the arguments against printing lots of brochures is obviously the paper and the print and the recycling and that kind of thing. And this is something that's very important to you, Paul. Do you think the management of production of brochures has changed? Do you think people are more aware of how many they're making and how many they're giving out? Or is it still a case of, can you send me a box of brochures, please, and they do it?
It's definitely got better. It still happens. I think it's got better not because people are more conscious of the environment, though, but because it costs more money to produce it, which is fine. And I think that in the old days, the joke was someone that you didn't trade with would drive 50 miles to your showroom to drop a box of brochures on your desk and walk out again. And you're like, what was the point of that? And then you ended up having to throw them away, et cetera, et cetera. So that doesn't happen anymore, you know, and when it does, it happens so rare that it creates more damage to the supplier that's done that than it does anything else. So you do get more than you need. You do still get too many boxes. And, you know, even in specialist bathroom companies like ourselves, you could have two product categories or two suppliers per product category and still with different versions and iterations of brochures. And, you know, some can still have four or five different collections and different launch brochures to support them. You can still have a bit of a library building up in your showroom that takes a lot to be organized. So you then end up culling it constantly. So we're never quite happy because it's that hypocritical point. Is we want the information that's in there and it's useful. But when we're not actually using it, it's a pain in the backside because of the space that we're using and the surplus amount that we get, because they have a shelf life, and that shelf life's made worse more really by pricing being in the document than it is anything else. But you just don't want to keep throwing things away, especially when it's a whole box of brochures that you didn't ask for. You asked for brochures and they sent three boxes. So it's just little things like that can improve. But the more these things cost money, the less that's going to happen. So to a certain extent, you need to just charge for brochures and you'll soon find out how important they are.
Paul, I am shocked to hear that brands are sending unsolicited boxes of brochures. Absolutely shocks me.
Well, they shouldn't. And they do so because if you look at their figures, it works for them. And that's the point, is I think that it works for them across their customer base, which are operating in different ways. It doesn't matter how much they do or don't spend or what they sell. And all the time it's working for them. I think there's a fear, and they probably won't want to go on record to say it, but a lot of marketing managers that I've spoken to, there is a fear that if they reduce it, if they stop, that their competitor won't, and their competitors will be handed out instead of theirs, or have 20% written off on the front cover and handed out. It's an understandable thought process, and it's not one that, you know, I would want to go piling in on them on, but it also highlights the nature of the habits that need to change across the different sectors of the industry in order for everyone to work together to find a way to print less, because there's no motive other than to save money and to save the forest, and it's going to be in that order. So we might as well just try to identify how we can all just do one less. And sending unsolicited brochures, I mean, if it were banned, it would help. It's just not going to make a massive difference. It's just one small part of the problem.
Adam, let's come to you with a point that Paul made there about prices in the brochures. You're having some kind of RRP in the brochure. Is that good or bad? Does it help you or not? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the total different side to these things, because part of me would be like, yeah, remove prices from brochure. It gives a longevity to something that's purely got images, ranges, etc. in it. However, then what you inevitably end up with is probably just a printed price list, which would have is something else that's then printed. Or you have to then go and find the price online. And it's something that we could get used to. I'm sure a lot of designers could get used to. But I'm sure for brands, there's a fear factor that, you know, the easier we make it, the easier it is to specify our product. If you introduce things like, here's a picture brochure that shows all the ranges and the names and the finishes, but you have to go online to find the price, is it going to introduce the element of they might lose something? I'm totally with Paul, though, that I'm just like, things should just change and we should just get used to it. Like, move it all online, do it. You know, we would get used to doing it. I think it's just that we're just used to what we've got. So like you do, I think we make an effort with like the less brochures, but there is an element where if it's all in one brochure, like Sophia was saying, where you've got prices, images, maybe reducing the size of it. I know Dan Sarney do it as well, where it's kind of, they've got a price list brochure. It is a tool as a designer, because, you know, if you've got someone that is struggling with budget and they're there right in front of you and you want to use it, or you're working on a design, it is quite easy then to flick back and forth and compare designs and say, okay, so this range is X, that range is X. And I mean, we do use price as part of design, obviously, because when we've got budgets, that dictates which part of the ranges we might use. I mean, technical information, that could be stored elsewhere, but I think price, ranges, finishes, it is handy if they're all quite close together, because I think they're often the driving factors of for a client, budget, design, and product design. So I think, you know, I think they're the three things that when we're working with clients, they're the three pillars that I always work with. So they're the three key factors I would think would probably want to be together in a brochure, and that's how I use them.
But if that brochure's come out and then 2 months later you get an email with a surcharge on it or a price change or a price increase, does that just not confuse the hell out of everybody?
Yeah, and I must admit, I think it is very annoying when you get given a brochure and then suddenly you get sent a sticker in the post. It's like, oh, by the way, it's this price list, but just whack that 5% sticker on. But it is on you to remember. It's not on us to do that. And I think that is frustrating because, again, to be honest, when you do that, part of me as a designer is very much like, oh, I'm not sure I can trust that price, actually. So maybe I use this brand instead because I know that one's up to date. So I don't know how manufacturers feel about that when they do it. I know they've got to do it, but I do think there is something in, you know, could you align price increases with brochure releases? Like, do they need to be at separate points of the year? I know obviously there'll be rising costs that are unforeseen and such, but it is frustrating because inevitably if you're working with quite a few clients, we just forget that one time as a business you then hit. So it is difficult. But yeah, that is a frustrating thing. They're the two, that's the kind of pro and the con to the price of the brochure, really. One, it really helps with design if someone's struggling with budget and you need to quickly reference to move between. But the offset is once it's got a printed price, how long can you trust it for?
Right, Paul, off you go.
Don't put stickers on price list. I'm with Adam, and I can't think anybody would agree to that. I can understand why it happened during COVID with various things happening, but the reality is it's just really poor planning by whoever is the owner of the brochure. It looks cheap, it's naff, and it should just be outlawed and shamed at every opportunity. I've got very strong feelings on it, obviously. I think we've got two types of customer. The majority sit down at our desk and want help choosing a room, and they bring together various different suppliers, products and ideas over, you know, sometimes a 3 or 4 stage process in terms of meetings and opportunities to sort of engage on it. On the whole, we're able to do, you know, we tend to be producing the product specification and the pricing to a fixed budget that the client's got in mind for their room. So we kind of do that offline, so to speak, when they're not in front of us generally. When they come in because they're shopping and they're after some accessories or after a mirror, they're after an add-on to an existing bathroom, whether they got it from us or not, it's a whole different situation. And they do want not only a document that they can easily read and choose from, but they obviously want prices in it and they want to know exactly what they're going to get for their money. And that's fine. And I think that is essential and it works very, very well. And likewise, not every customer is or should be really pointed online to find everything, you know. I'm sure my mother would be upset if I told her everything needed to be on her internet screen, because it means it should be phoning me more. It's not fair to do that to customers. But I just think that we should, again, just keep, ask ourselves, what's the application? What's the purpose? Is it needed? Rather than, did we do it yesterday, so let's do it tomorrow. And it just needs a bit of refinement. And I don't have a problem with printed brochures. Clearly, as I've said, we have them. If someone said to you, this piece of plastic is made from recycled plastic, we all stop worrying about it. So it's the same with paper. It can come from sustainable places and paper can be recycled. But if we had less of them and nobody was inconvenienced, then we're all better off again. And it's pushing the edges, really, to where we can make a difference, rather than an outright conversation of should they almost be banned or not. So you'll never find the same answer from everybody, but you can get a bit more information if you start the debate as you have.
No, I mean, I think it's about waste, isn't it? And if things are being used, then it's fair enough. But I think it's if they're being wasted, that's when it becomes an issue. Sophia, you've clearly made a decision to put prices in your brochure and stick to them. Talk to me about the thought process behind that.
Again, it's because, as Adam says, to have the prices in the brochure, it's convenience. Otherwise, having a separate printed price list defeats the object. Having to go online, it's difficult. So it's all about convenience. We plan 6 months ahead. So we know when we generally launch in January and February, we allow a margin of error. And overall, over the year, it will balance out. I think it's just planning really well. I mean, unless a disaster happens during COVID, and even during COVID, we didn't raise our prices. We didn't put surcharges. We absolutely hate that. And also, if you think about it, we would have had a lot of the stock at the old prices. Therefore, over the year, it just balances. And it's part of our values, the way we are just very transparent with our customers, and we manage it throughout the year. I think other brands just used it as an excuse.
Well, I think it's a comparative thing about the size of the company as well. I mean, you are that company and you can decide what it is you do. But if you're a global brand of the kind of ones we've been talking about here today, it's much more difficult to be that decisive in each individual market.
Yeah, no, I'm just being controversial.
This is such a fascinating subject, weirdly, for something that's seemingly so simple, but it does touch on every aspect of the business, doesn't it? And I think it touches on the relationship between retailers and suppliers. I think it touches on sustainability. It touches on prices. It's got a little bit of everything in it. So, look, thank you to the three of you for sparing a little bit of time to talk about it today. I'm sure this one's going to run and run.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Paul Crow, Adam Woolerton and Sophia Sharon-Amber. So huge thanks to them for their time. I think the current conversation around brochures is a really interesting challenge of a status quo that's existed for many years. Now, obviously, we at KBB View print lots of magazines, so I'm sympathising with a lot of the points raised there about the cost of paper and postage, as they've gone up by, frankly, eye-watering amounts in the last few years. So you're always looking to eliminate waste and reduce that cost wherever you can. Really interesting stuff. Love to hear what you think about it. I think an awful lot of brands will be really interested to see where this debate goes as well. So feel free to contact me. I'll put my email address in the episode description. I'll see you next time.